Welcome to Florida.
That is the voice of New York Times best-selling author and award-winning environmental reporter Craig Pittman. My name is Chad Scott, and this is Welcome to Florida. Very excited, as always, but this episode in particular, because we're finally going to talk about the escaped invasive feral wild monkeys that occur in Central Florida. Topic, again, on my list of bucket list topics when we started the podcast over 2 years ago now. This was definitely on it. So I'm happy that, I don't know what we're at, episode 114, 113, something like that. We're finally getting to it. Before we go there, we will start, however, with another attempt by state Republicans to commingle, align, confuse climate change with the quote unquote woke agenda.
Yeah, it was just amazing. I wrote a column about this for the Florida Phoenix, talking about how the new Speaker of the House, Paul Renner, who is an attorney in Palm Coast, which definitely has a problem with climate change and rising sea levels and storm surge, was claiming that one of the big problems Florida has is with woke billionaires, and that's his term, woke billionaires, who are trying to change our energy economy and cause a politically induced energy crisis by steering the country away from fossil fuels. And I thought, well, wait a minute. Okay, fossil fuels are what causes climate change. Isn't it a good thing that we want to stop that stuff in order to prevent your hometown from getting inundated by rising seas? So I wrote a column about that and about the whole woke billionaires thing. And I dug through Representative Renner's campaign contributions. And wow, he sure gets an awful lot from the power plants and from Koch Industries, the coal and oil companies.
Yeah.
So,
well, Palm Coast, this is an incredible coincidence, but I happen to know a guy who on Fernandina who is, essentially he's a geologist, and he actually worked for fossil fuel companies back in the day, but now he's really into shoreline restorations. And Palm Coast had a nor'easter there recently that caused huge shoreline erosion, and that is a function of stronger storms, greater storm surge, higher sea level. So I mean, this is absolutely an issue that is imperative to this politician's home base. But here's what's going on with the Republicans on an issue that used to be bipartisan. Again, we've talked a number of times how the nation's largest environmental regulation laws were passed by Nixon.
Yeah.
Or signed off on.
Signed off by Nixon and passed by a bipartisan Congress.
And how George Bush won, talked about how he was going to apply the power of the presidency to fight global warming. But since then, climate change has definitely become a culture war issue for the Republicans and for conservatives. They are no longer in the denial stage. You can no longer credibly deny climate change. Anyone can look outside their house and see the flooding and the storms and the heat and recognize that climate change is real. So instead of denial, the Republicans have gone to delay. And their delay tactic is to conflate climate change with the culture war. And the culture war now is about the woke agenda and the idea that anything having to do with LGBTQ issues, abortion issues,
race,
policing reform, race, all of this is about the woke agenda and identity politics and this laughable boogeyman idea of woke billionaires. How many billionaires do you think there are in Florida? Probably fewer than 100. So this entire, this politician's efforts to support fossil fuels and deny us a clean energy future is predicated on this idea that there are these woke billionaires with the puppet strings trying to influence energy policy in the state, when there are no woke billionaires in any official capacity in Florida right now after two decades of Republican political appointees across every power company, electric company, board, you name it. This is just total, candidly, bullshit attempt to keep us on a death ride with fossil fuels and climate change.
Well, and we do have billionaires in Florida. They're, you know what they're doing? They're trying to get the Northern Turnpike Extension built to open up more land for development. So well, that's what they're all about.
Yeah, the Republicans have very cleverly taken away, and the Democrats have very stupidly allowed them to become the party of the working man, the working class. And anytime you talk about billionaires, now we're getting into class warfare, right? Because working people, you know, don't like the idea of a billion, all those billionaires, and now they're woke billionaires. Oh, that's doubly bad. And well, if woke billionaires like solar power and wind energy, then I don't. And you know, I'm going to fuel up my car with leaded gasoline. You know, it's just such falderal and a strategy the Republicans have employed nationwide to no longer deny climate change, but to delay action on climate change and green energy. And they're doing so by making climate change a culture war issue and making it out that it's only the woke liberals in Washington or Tallahassee or Hollywood or wherever who really think clean energy is a good idea. And it's just nonsense. And it's a shame that the most powerful,
like this.
Most powerful people in this state not only believe in this, but promote it lock, stock, and barrel. Florida Phoenix. .com. Craig's article about this is something definitely to spend some time with and really think deeply on it as you ponder our future in an increasingly unlivable planet. Well, we've got exciting news, Craig, because we've got a new sponsor to the podcast.
Yay!
And that new sponsor happens to fit in very nicely with climate change. Windstorm Products. Windstormproducts.com, the world's largest online distributor of hurricane hardware. Now, what is hurricane hardware? These are the screw anchors for concrete and bricks, the sidewalk bolts, all this kind of stuff you need to secure your property or your business. They do home residential from the wind and flooding that comes along with hurricanes. And what's better yet is they have a helpline. You can pick up the phone and talk to someone and say, hey, you know, I've got, you know, my deck it looks like this, and I've got a pool, and I've got this kind of awning, or I've got a business and I've got these many seats outside. You know, what products do I need and how do I install them? So they aren't just selling stuff. They're helping you out and selling information and their knowledge, having dealt in this material and working with construction companies all across Florida for decades now. So it's heavy duty, professional grade. And now's the time to be thinking about this before the storm.
Don't wait till
begins.
You're in the cone of uncertainty. Yeah.
Yes, right. At that time, it's probably too late to call and get your delivery of hurricane hardware from Windstorm Products. You'll be dealing with the insurance man, not the preventative maintenance guy. Windstormproducts.com. We'll tell you more about them in coming weeks, but we want to thank them for helping us bring welcome to Florida to everyone. Windstormproducts.com. All right. This week's guest is a novelist. Deb Rogers has a new novel out, Florida Woman. It is the title. It was just published in July of 2022. What brought you to Deb to invite her onto the podcast, Craig?
Well, she actually contacted me to let me know that she had this book coming out. And what intrigued me was that Florida's monkey population actually plays a pretty prominent role in the novel. And when I read it, I thought, I bet she's done some research on this. And I contacted her and she said, yeah, I can come on and talk about monkeys. And I said, great.
Wonderful.
So
yeah, she's a Florida woman herself, at Deb on the Rocks on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. If you want to follow along with her again, you can find information about the book and where to purchase in the show notes. Deb Rogers, author, Florida Woman.
Deb, congratulations on the publication of your debut novel, Florida Woman. And of course, the great title. I have to tell people that's such a great subject. But I really like the cover, which has a monkey very prominently displayed on it, sitting in the top of, I guess, a palm tree. How big a focus or tell people how big a focus monkeys are in the book and why that's an appropriate topic for a Florida set book.
Thanks, Craig. It's so exciting to finally talk to you. I have been obsessed with Florida's monkey problem, especially the macaques of Central Florida, for decades. And I love them because they're just such an exciting overlap of so many things that are just so quintessentially Florida, including our ecological system, our tourism balance, and a real problem we have with figuring out the ethics of all of that, including the fact that they're adorable on the surface. And beneath that belies a lot of problems, lawlessness, criminal overlap, and a real failure of knowing what to do. Yeah. So I knew that they would make a really particularly engaging and fascinating problem for characters in a fictional setting to handle. So they're a big part of the setting of my book, and they're part of the ethics of what my characters face, why they make the choices they do. And in particular, Florida Women is concerned with some women who are trying to figure out how the land where they live and want to retain ownership of, which is a common problem in Florida, that they're getting, you know, taxed out of, they're cash poor but land rich in an area that's overdeveloping every second of the day, trying to figure out how to keep that. And they kind of make it up as they go along and land on maybe helping become a refuge for both exotically traded and wildlife rescues. Now that, and that's something that happens throughout Florida. People, for whatever reason, either their love of the animals or the problem in Florida with these animals who are in our beautiful, temperate, wild, weird state where people do wild and weird things. You know, what do we do about that? So they get involved with that, sort of make it up as they go along, and along the way, attach some spiritual and business ideas and grand dreams to these monkeys that they are on the surface rescuing.
Widen out a little bit for folks who aren't aware of these contained yet feral wild populations of monkeys in Florida. A lot of people will be hearing this and be like, what on earth are you talking about? Monkeys in Florida.
Right. Well,
and they're not just in Tallahassee.
Exactly. Where I've lived, and I've known quite a few of corrupt situations there as well. But the monkeys that I'm mostly obsessed with are the Central Florida macaques. And they were introduced to Florida, like so many of our problems were introduced to Florida, through the tourism industry and through a wild Florida man with a wild Florida idea. In the 30s, good old Colonel Toohey. Craig, is that his first name? And did they ever figure out what his first name?
I have never seen anyone reliably report his first name. We just know. And I've also seen him called Captain Toohey. So there's some disagreement about his,
that's fine.
About his rank, if any.
Well, hey, if it's in Florida, is there not going to be a disagreement about everything, including exactly. our mythology? Well, he was one of those, you know, early 30s tourist operators who tried to make exciting use of his land, had a gorgeous, I love the area of the Ocala River, Ocala's Marion County, are beautiful state parks that make use of the springs there, have preserved a lot of that area. The Ocala National Forest is the oldest national forest east of the Mississippi, or one of the oldest. I mean, just beautiful, beautiful land. And he wanted to bring folks down and give them a jungle tour. And he didn't think the area was beautiful enough. He wanted to enhance it. And this was on the heels of Tarzan fever, when the pop culture was really bringing those vibes to our land. And Florida is the perfect ecology, the perfect, you know, beautiful weather to host monkeys. So he introduced a few to an island in where he had those boats.
He was in the Silver River, I think. Yeah.
Silver River. There you go.
Yes. Yeah.
And forgetting that monkeys could swim. Who knew monkeys could swim?
I doubt he forgot that. I'm guessing he didn't know that.
Didn't know it. Colonel Toohey didn't know that. So they escaped and I believe were repopulated. And anyway, throughout the course of the years after that, they're highly adaptable. They're fabulously charismatic. People have fed them as well as they've found a diversity of food. I've just become obsessed with the way they have fit into that landscape, survived winter, survived storms. Troops of usually female-led troops have expanded, and sometimes they've kicked out isolated males who've gone on to explore, and they've spread. So
yeah, it's the classic Jurassic Park, life finds a way. right? I mean, they've got no business being there, but the primary impulse of any organism is to survive. And these monkeys in a very, like you mentioned, favorable climate and rich habitat for biodiversity have found a way. What is their population presently? Any idea?
Yeah, well, that's gone up and down. And it's as with anything in Florida, highly controversial. You know, there was a time period, my understanding in the until recently, really, they were expanding because of the rich food sources and their support. They were allowed to be trapped for a while to reduce those numbers, to control that population. But then that met with disfavorable responses from the public because they are so much like us. And that felt like a difficult thing to do.
Also, the turned out the trapper was selling them to a place that did experiments. So that was that was a big PR mistake for the state park system.
Huge, huge. Yeah. So, wow. You know, so the ethics of what do you do with this? And then there's a secondary problem where many of them are carriers of a serious virus to us. It doesn't hurt them, but the herpes B virus, if we're bitten or scratched, can be fatal to humans.
So are we talking about 100 animals, 200?
The estimate right now, I believe, is 400.
400.
But it's gone up and down depending on, and it also depends on what they're counting. You know, it's very difficult. Many researchers have backed away from counting them because they don't want them to get used to humans. Because the more that they're used to humans, the more dangerous they are, you know, to themselves, either becoming harmed by looking for food or interacting with humans. So right
how common are interactions? I mean, again, Florida is a pretty populated state, I have never seen a story of an interaction which would surely go terrible for both animal and interactee, you know, the human.
There are people who seek them out. There definitely still are trappers. They're very valuable. That was my first foray into learning about them was when I was living near Crescent City, a poacher, knew where the land was located, where I lived, possibly would have single male monkeys traveling across it, and said that he would give me a bounty if I helped him find any that I happened to see. Wow. So I know that even going back to the 90s, the 2000s, trappers were, you know, trying to find them. Either they'll sometimes be on the streets around that river area.
Oh my gosh.
Wanting to trap them. Wow. And then kayakers, people in the Ocala area, definitely all up to the Aklawahaha. Oh, that's not right.
Aklawaha.
Yeah. Aklawaha.
Thank you.
River, I'm the only one who can butcher names on this podcast. So don't
because he has the edit button.
Yeah, don't steal my gimmick.
Help me with that. That's where I've seen monkeys. And kayakers are.
So you've seen them?
Yes, I've seen them.
Oh, wow. Sure.
And well, especially including going to Silver Springs in order to try to see them. Uh-huh. But kayakers have seen them. And usually there's not an interaction except if they're wanting food. You know, I've seen them pick up watermelon that was thrown to them or come looking for food. So because they're so delightful to watch dig into food that people really do promote that. And then there have been some experiences where people have had gangs of them running at them, which may or may not be attacked, but sure feels like it if the group are
they're screeching at you. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now there's just a news story in Japan right now that the same species of animal, macaques, are stealing babies from homes. So it is a worry that if their numbers become large enough, that they would become more emboldened, or if their food supply, of course, is threatened.
Yeah, and I don't care what the species is. People have no idea how fast, strong, and aggressive all wild animals are, and their ability to scratch and bite and claw, because they fight for their lives every single day. They don't go home and kick up their feet and Netflix and chill and do DoorDash. They have to eat something or be eaten every single day. And the Darwinism that creates through the eons creates incredibly strong, fast, and aggressive speed. And I don't care whether that's a deer or a gorilla or a little monkey or a lizard. When they tangle with humans, they will always leave a mark. If you don't mind my asking, what was the bounty that the trapper was willing to give you as a cut of capturing an animal?
That's a great, great question, because I, at the time I was very impressed he was going to offer me a share of his $500. And I later learned that that's a pittance of what a monkey is worth. So he was, in addition to trying to rip off some monkeys, he was trying to rip me off.
Yeah. Classic, I don't think poachers are really well known for their ethical business practices. So you probably shouldn't be surprised there.
Yeah, don't. Exactly. They're pretty sure you can't report them to the Poacher Board of Ethics.
Right. Exactly. There's no
call board. A better business bureau and say, I was dealing with a monkey poacher, and I feel he's trying to extort me here.
You can't even get help with roofers in Florida. I don't think you're going to get help.
Yeah, good point.
But the cuteness of the animals, like you said, people don't realize that they are, of course, survivors, and they can, after they reach sexual maturity, be ruthless for good, important biological reasons. But that trade of the exotics is a big problem, because at first they seem personable, charismatic, cute. And then there's also one other thing that fascinates me about monkeys in particular, but all exotics, and the exotics that I ended up being interested in for my book, is that they also have a cachet amongst the lawless, including just regular old lawless Floridians, or, larger transnational criminal organizations. So there's a cachet with owning exotics and paying for them, paying big money for them. I mean, everything from Pablo Escobar's hippos on down to a monkey that was recently sold by someone called the Monkey Whisperer here in Florida.
Here in Florida, yes.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean,
to a, like a basketball star or something.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, famously, Mike Tyson had tigers, you know, and it's just this, you talk about just a bizarre subculture of, you've got the subculture of pet ownership, and then you get into the exotic, and it is largely criminal, because the trade in these animals is highly regulated, and then you get into international trade, and you start talking about ivory and pangolins products, and all kinds of products that are supposed to be aphrodisiacs bought for the market in China. Exotics get sketchy fast. And, you know, one of my things, I wish the entire exotic animal trade was shut down tomorrow. You know, if I had my magic wand, you would not be able to buy any of that kind of stuff or trade in it or in the United States, period.
Exactly. Are you saying animals shouldn't be in a lifestyle accessory?
not some of them.
Like you purse?
Yeah, you want to take your Pomeranian through the mall with you and in your Chanel bag. That's one thing. But I don't think anyone should be owning a lion or a monkey or, you know, a dolphin. Or, you know, there's just no place for that. It is by its nature inhumane to the animal and dangerous. And, you know, we've experienced so much of that in Florida with invasive species, you know, to speak nothing of the economic ruin of people letting Burmese pythons go, or, you know, the lizards in South Florida and the snails. There's another, you know, African land snail, you know,
in Pasco County now. Yes.
Bloom. Yeah. So, I mean, there are 1,000 good reasons not to have exotic pets, and really none to have them, in my opinion.
Exactly. I mean, ecologically and biologically and humanely for the animals themselves. And then that brings up the whole question of refuges, because something is needed, maybe not for snails, but for for tigers and for monkeys. And often they're either bred and they're held as by people when they're young, or they're in these ad hoc zoos where they provide an experience with a young animal. But then something so often. Law enforcement doesn't know what to do when they either find someone who's had criminal organizational affiliations and has also traded these animals or owns these animals. They need housing or humane disposal, but as a public, we haven't yet wrestled with the ethics of that. And Florida, I mean, it's a multi-billion dollar global problem, but Florida is a big, big part of that.
Oh, yeah.
I was going to ask you in your book, it's not feral monkeys they're dealing with. This place is set up like a refuge for monkeys that were part of a trafficking operation or were someone's pet and got abused or something like that. Did you go to some refuges to do research on how they handled that?
I did. I went to both types of refuges in Florida, both really good ones that are doing good work with this weird problem that we have. Like, what do you do with the problem of having animals that either need veterinary care? See, the wild animals who don't have veterinary protection right now. So if a wild animal is injured on a power line or by a car crossing the road, they might need rehabilitation or services away, not be able to be re-released to the wild. So they need refuge services. And then animals who are either found either neglected because someone does have a class ownership that is breeding them or abusing them in some way, and or someone who shouldn't have them. They've found, you know, tigers in garages and monkeys in apartments that are, you know, after an owner moves out because they can't handle the monkey anymore. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it definitely did. And Florida has many of these operations, mostly because of our climate. Year round, you know, we can offer that. And there's some people doing really, really good work. And they were generous enough to help me understand, even though I was going to write about it in sort of a way that included sinister behavior, shared with me how they're doing that. But even that's controversial. You know, we have a lot to grapple with when it comes to our relationship with animals.
What are some of the issues that they're dealing with at these refuges? You told me you can't really name them. They asked you not to name them, but can you at least talk about some of what they're going through with this?
Sure. Well, funding, because if they had the funding for a proper habitat for an animal as large as a leopard who's aged out of a petting zoo, you know, they really can't offer it a proper habitat. And they might know that. They might have conflicted feelings about not being able to offer that to the aging pet, but nobody else is offering them the care that they are offering and providing it a quality of life that befits its natural stature. That's some of the ethics. Getting proper staff, you know, who's trained to handle this. So they do a lot of training from within, but those are mostly volunteers. And those volunteers are doing that work for their own reasons. And, you know, it's just as any nonprofit grapples with how do you provide an ethical living wage to your workers. It's a problem that we all haven't handled. And then there's the disposition of the animals and when is the public okay with euthanasia? When is it not? We don't know how to handle that at all with pets of any kind, let alone exotics.
Well, I mean, and again, when animals are in captivity appropriately, humanely, ethically, responsibly, and we could go round and round, I guess, on this, but we'll broadly say in zoos, right? The people caring for those animals have gone to school, veterinary school for 10 years and get ongoing education. I mean, they are trained professionals and these enclosures are enormous and generally or certainly larger than what a regular person could provide them. So you need that space because these are wild animals. After all, these are not cats or dogs, and you can't just put 50 of them in. Or this is not a cat cafe. There are no monkey cafes. There are no tiger cafes where you go adopt out a cat at the local cat cafe. So from feeding to medicine to the care to the enclosures and the housing, yeah, I mean the obstacles and the challenges are just astronomical and boggle the mind. And then I'm sure they find new ones every single day because there unfortunately is a need for these refuges because people acquire these animals who have no business obviously handling them and then just ditch them when, you know, they can't take care of them anymore.
Exactly. And that's what did make it, even though it's a really big, hard to handle problems, it made it fun to explore in a fictional setting because you could show people, you know, really not knowing what to do, trying to make it up as they go along and bungling their way through this really hard, but also needed problem to solve.
What sort of regulation do these places have?
Well, the state does a number of really good oversight over them with requiring class licensure, inspections. Florida Wildlife Commission does its inspections, the Department of Health and all the different departments have different, depending on what is being required of the different species involved. They have a lot of accountability and oversight, but then there's a lot of oversight that's lacking. One thing I understood was, whereas they have census numbers of how many animals they don't have exact imprinting of each animal. So whereas they might have five tigers, we don't know exactly which of those tigers may have passed and been replaced with another tiger. So yeah, so there's definitely place for legislation to catch up with the realities of what goes on there. And there's a lot of laws about the disposition of their bodies when they die, but there's also areas that are lacking in that as well.
So. Yeah, and there's another thing. Okay, what do you do with a 600-pound tiger when it dies?
Right.
Take it to the dump, or you know, put it at the roadside.
I mean, yeah, I don't think so.
Right. So again, we get into all of these obstacles again that you, like you say, figure out as you go along. Oh, damn! I never really thought about that. Or you know, the exactly. dental care for tigers in mm-hmm. these species again. It's incredibly painful. You know, you get your own abscess mm-hmm. tooth or something like that. Imagine if you're a tiger with those big canines. I mean, again, these animals need professional care when they're not in the wild, because they're not supposed to live on concrete in a cage in Ocala. You know, it's just, yeah,
exactly. It's super specific, you know, a vet yeah. for
yes,
a vet
right.
for a bird, a large bird is not the same.
Well, right. If I remember correctly, there's only one accredited veterinary school at a Florida university. It's one at UF, and that's it.
That's
so
it.
That kind of limits how many new veterinarians are coming into
that's
the market.
Surprising. And you know, that's yeah. totally off topic, but for a kind of an agrarian state with its cattle history and all that, you know, well,
exactly.
interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It sort of leads the way. Any of these problems lead the way into others. You know, what is this problem is probably only going to grow as other states become warmer and able to handle the same sort of yeah. situation as Florida has had.
Mm. Did the and your novel Florida Woman, did it start with the monkeys and expand from there, or did it start with the human characters and then the monkeys became kind of a sidecar to it?
I think it really started with a love of the Central Florida area. I mm-hmm. do. I love that Ocala National Forest area, and I love the people who live there and have fought for it. Against all odds, it's a neglected part of Florida. And so I think I've collected characters and obsessions along the way. And the monkeys, were a really great fit for all those ethical questions and sure. character questions.
How often are you told that it's a novel? How often are you told or asked if this is real and not totally made up whole cloth?
Definitely, definitely that. And I totally respect that. People want to know, does this really happen? And it is close enough to a lot of things that have really happened that those are legit questions that I absolutely can't answer.
Mm-hmm. That's always the challenge of writing fiction in Florida is usually the real life is far stranger than anything you can make up.
Exactly. You have to tame it a little bit to make, because you have to fit it all in a book. I mean, you could go in so many different directions, but definitely my characters were tempted by the, like you talk about the disposal of a massive tiger, a responsible veterinarian disposal would be cremation, but that the products of a dead tiger, meaning its teeth, its claws, its hide, its bones, are thousands of dollars. So, you know, how does someone who needs money, is desperate for money and making their ethics up as they go along, handle mm-hmm. that conundrum? Those were the things that it really was fun to explore through my characters.
I want to be careful asking this question because I don't want to give away the plot, but one of the macaques in the novel displays a particular skill that really kind of surprised me. With its hands. Is that something that you observed in real life, or is that something you've heard about?
Yes, I haven't observed it, but I had really great consultation specifically on the things that had to do with the animal feeding and the animal enclosures mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. what's hard about keeping animals enclosed. And yeah, there's one of the characters in the book is a macaque who is an escape artist. And that is a huge problem with these animals. People think they can contain them, and they are very smart. Birds are very smart at managing their enclosures. It's that survival instinct.
Yeah.
They apply their entire brain all day long to figuring out, how can I evade capture? And, yeah. and is there a possibility of whether, and sometimes they've had enclosures where they didn't think an animal was strong enough to break it for years. And then all of a sudden there's a break in one way, or locks managed in one way or other. It's a huge problem in the yeah. industry. Well, and one they don't like to talk about because they don't want many of these ad hoc zoos are in near residential areas.
Yeah. And just think of your own, you know, pets, dogs who were able to chew through cages, or, you know, I had a cat who was an escape artist. And like you say, all that cat did all day long was think about how it could get past this barrier up toward my bedroom at night so it could come in bed. And, you know, wild animals and monkeys in particular are going to be smarter. They've got hands. And like you said,
they're excellent mimics as well. They learn by watching the humans who take care of them. Oh, wow. Is what I've been told.
And much stronger, again, than you think. And will go, again, they don't want to be caged. So, you know, we all have heard stories of animals, you know, chewing off their own limbs when they're caught in traps. Right. You know, there's no, you know, barrier at which they won't surpass to be free. And again, it's just another complication of this sad reality, which all hatches from the exotic animal trade. And just the idea that this shouldn't be a problem because there should not be a trade in exotic animals, because this necessarily is one offshoot of it. You cannot avoid this part of it. If you want to open up the exotic animal trade, there are going to be people acquiring the animals who have no business owning them, and then they abandon them and leave that problem for, you know, the rest of us to figure out one way or another.
Absolutely.
You bring up a good point about them being the one in the novel is nowhere near civilization, but a lot of these places are near populated areas. And so I think it was last year a kangaroo took advantage of a moment's inattention and escaped and was hopping down a street in Fort Lauderdale. And there's this great photo of the kangaroo hopping and like a line of police cars very slowly following behind it.
Wow. Just wow.
For the to recapture it. You know?
Exactly. And no one's trained for that. No one.
Yeah. I mean, that, you know, it's, oh, okay, just another day in Florida. Okay. Do you foresee using monkeys in another novel?
I don't know. I love Florida. And so monkeys are a big part of Florida. It's hard to love them and then not see them everywhere. So you never know. They're not currently in the novel that I'm working on, but I am interested in the Ocala National Park area.
They may escape into it. You never know.
They have that way.
Thanks.
If people wanted to go see the macaques at Silver Springs, what would you suggest for them?
Definitely book a tour on that glass bottom boat. One, I am a big fan of glass bottom boats, and Florida's spring system there's a great one in Wakala and the great one in Silver Springs area. I would book a tour on that glass bottom boat. It's not expensive. And I bet you'll see monkeys from there unless it's breeding season or something. And wow. They're tucked away, but start there. And if you're a kayaker, give that a try as well. And I bet you'll see some.
But don't try and feed them. That's bad.
Don't try to feed them. Don't try to take them home in your pocketbook. Leave them where you found them.
That brings up a good point. How large are these monkeys? Because I'm not, you know, familiar with this. I'm imagining something around the size of a chimpanzee or something like that. But how large are these?
Think more like a very large cat or a small dog at full size, like 15 pounds, I guess, is what they say. They're gorgeous.
But with sharper teeth and stronger legs.
Yeah. Arms. Much smarter. Yeah. And the claws, the whole thing. Deb Rogers has been our guest. The book just published July of 2022 is Florida Woman. You can find Deb on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at Deb on the Rocks. This has been wonderful. And another one of these bucket list episodes about the escape monkeys that we're checking off slowly but surely over the course of the podcast. And thank you so much for sharing your insight into this subject and congratulations on the book.
I love it. Thank you so much. What a pleasure.
Thanks again.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
I had no idea the monkeys were that easy and regular to see, Craig. I thought they were a little more mysterious than that.
Well, and the amazing thing to me is they're not the only monkey colony in Florida.
Yeah.
There are at least three that I know of. One is Monkey Island in Hernando County, which I think there's about eight monkeys there. And they're currently building a new shelter for them that includes air conditioning. So they'll actually be doing better off than, you know, prisoners in the Florida prison system who have no air conditioning. And then there's a colony, I want to say, of about 80 to 100 vervet monkeys in Dania Beach near
Where's
the,
that?
It's near Fort Lauderdale. It's actually near the Fort Lauderdale airport. Wow. And they are, they're a really interesting group because they are escapees from a research lab and who they got out and, you know, basically formed their own family out there. And, and now a group has come in to try and build them a shelter and somehow perhaps get control of the population so it doesn't continue to grow.
Goodness.
So,
gracious.
I mean, you know, how many states are there that have wild monkey colonies? I think Florida's the only one, and it's only one with three.
Yeah, gosh. You know? let's hope so. I'm going to shout out two places that do a great job refuging animals. One is by me, Caddyshack Ranch, which takes in big cats, which it gets from private zoos, which have been lost their licenses or again, private owners who abandon the animals. Caddyshack Ranch in Jacksonville near the airport does a wonderful job caring for tigers, lions, bobcats, you name it, that kind of thing. And then there is an elephant rescue refuge in the Sarasota area. And we mentioned that on one of the previous Sarasota.
City, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, it's way out east in the county, but something for you to check out if you're in Sarasota. And that, of course, takes us to visit Sarasota, a loyal sponsor of the podcast. And I saw this in Garden and Gun recently, an article, how Sarasota became the South's hotspot for mid-century design. We brought this up on a previous episode. Mm-hmm. I forget which, but the Sarasota School of Architecture evolved in the mid-20th century. It combined modernism with life in hot and humid climates, and it evolved this tropical modernism. Well, Architecture Sarasota is a new group raising awareness and preserving that architectural history in Sarasota. They offer tours. I'll put a link to that in the show notes. But among everything else, Sarasota has the beaches and Moat Marine and the dining and the shopping, an incredible, not quite Palm Springs, but something like that, an architectural history most people are totally unaware of.
Yeah, no, the Paul Rudolph designed buildings and his disciples are just, they're pretty amazing to look at these days.
Welcome to Florida.
Welcome to Florida.